Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our winter was warm. The snow and ice are mostly gone from our yards, and Alaskans are itching to get out into their gardens. Some Alaskans, as you'll hear on today's show, are already out in their gardens. So how do you do that? We'll find out. Today on Hometown Alaska, we've got the guests who can help you get gardening. I'd like to welcome Dennis Ronci.
Hi, Kathleen.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, you did.
Ronci, yeah. Ronci, great. Okay. And Don Wood. Welcome, Don.
Hi, Kathleen.
And we don't have to talk about how you spell your name. It's
nope,
fine.
Now,
you both are master gardeners, am I right?
Correct.
Yes.
And I actually learned about you because there's a big master gardener conference happening, and there are other garden conferences happening, and have happened and will happen. But I just checked that website today and it sold out. It was April 16th was the
yeah,
date.
It's coming up.
But anyway, you know, we also just know everybody's in the mood and itching to get out there. So you were recommended to me with some specialties. Dennis, you were recommended because you're a great guy with dirt. And we'll get there.
That sounds a little embarrassing, Kathleen, but it's true.
It's true. You have talent there. And Don has really made sort of growing produce in a little city yard an art form. So we're going to talk about what you do in both of those areas. I'm going to throw out our phone numbers for our listeners and just let them know we can take calls the whole hour. We can take emails as well. So if you're in Anchorage and you want to talk to Dennis or Don or ask a question, 550-8433, or statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I told you before we started, I wanted to get from each one of you why gardening became a passion. And we agreed passion was an okay, not obsession, but passion was a good word to use. Let's start with you, Don. How did you get there?
Well, my wife and I bought a house in 2000. That neither of us could really afford, and it came with a house guest. So part of the stipulation was this friend of the people we bought our house from was staying there until he went back to teaching or being a principal out in the bush. And he would bring home fresh vegetables from neighborhood gardens as payment for room and board.
And you accepted that.
And we accepted that and made an amazing discovery. Vegetables have taste. Having grown up here and bought vegetables at Cars and the sort of grocery stores, we didn't know that. My wife and I were both just in shock that those vegetable-shaped objects.
It doesn't all taste like tired grass.
Exactly. Yeah. So we decided, both because we were broke and because they had taste, we would try growing some ourselves. And that was 16
and you're,
years
you're
ago.
And you're in the Nunaka Valley area.
Nunaka Valley area.
Which would be the east side of town, which might be a little cooler.
We are in the coldest spot in Anchorage in the winter and the warmest spot in the summer, yeah. So
we're going to get back to you. Let's talk a little bit to Dennis. How did gardening become your passion?
Well, Kathleen, I admit that being a bit of a behavior problem as a kid, I'd get sent outside once in a while. And my mother would say, go run around the house till you're ready to come back in here. And I invariably would get entertained by things going around the house. I remember distinctly seeing big patches of daffodils and being just amazed. And so actually I started to enjoy getting sent out of the house.
Mm-hmm. My dad used to say, run around the block twice and come back once.
Yeah.
So anyway, you would go out and you just kind of hang out in the yard?
And then, of course, I discovered things. And then I asked my mom to help me with some gardening. And so she had my uncle come and plow up a big chunk of the backyard.
For you?
For me, as a kid about 10 years old. So anyway.
Was she a big gardener?
Not at all. Oh. No, but she really, I think she was struggling with the child.
And she was hoping that if I can keep him busy.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So anyway, that was quite a long time ago. And then my wife and I actually took over her family farm when her father died unexpectedly. So this was way back in Kansas. And her father was a very capable organic gardener long time ago, before organic gardening was the least bit interesting for most people. So we learned a lot through that process and then came to Alaska for about 30 years now and got very involved in gardening in our Anchorage neighborhood. After we moved into Anchorage, we were in the bush for a number of years.
What part of Anchorage are you in?
We're in Ocean View.
Okay, because I just think different gardeners from around Anchorage might mm-hmm. be interested in learning what's working in your garden or how you deal uh-huh. with some condition that mm-hmm. is prominent in that part of town, because we do have microclimates.
We
I think.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. So let's see. I also said that early on I wanted you each to try to paint a picture of your garden so that our listeners could get a sense of what you represent. So let's start with you, Don. You have a very particular small city lot.
I have a standard city lot, yeah, with actually a fairly large house on it. So I have a smaller than normal city lot as far as backyard. But the house didn't have a yard when we bought it. It had basically a gravel pad for a kiln in the backyard.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Because the woman who lived there was a potter.
Ceramic potter.
And then we're on a park, so we didn't really need a lawn for the family, because we could just walk out our gate and be on a lawn. And like I said, we started growing vegetables and thought, well, here we go. We'll start building beds. And now my backyard consists of a small orchard of 10 apple trees and a greenhouse on the north side of the property.
And how big is your greenhouse?
My greenhouse is 8 by 12.
Okay.
And then, or 8, I'm sorry, 8 by 16.
Okay.
And then I have 4 16-foot by 4-foot beds down the middle between them.
4 16 by 4.
Right.
Okay.
But then we also garden on our second-story deck. We have a 18-foot long south-facing deck that I
nice
grow.
Nice and warm up there.
It is. We already have plants out there. Mm-hmm. We grow quite a bit of food. We have 3 rows of pots, 5-gallon pots, basically, along that south-facing wall. And then we garden, actually, the guardrail is also a garden.
You have things hanging on the guardrail?
We have a strawberry patch hanging over the edge of the guardrail.
How do you have a strawberry patch hanging over the guardrail? Is it in bags?
It's in pots that are in planters made out of fence boards.
Okay.
And then we have assorted pots. I usually line my driveway with pots that have potatoes in them, so we grow our potatoes on the driveway. And
do you have lawn in the front or no lawn?
There's at least 25 square feet of lawn in the front yard.
And you're not yet plowing that up and turning that into vegetables?
No, I have built a beautiful perennial garden up front that takes care of itself, so I don't have to do too much there.
Okay.
We will actually probably get rid of that lawn, just because with 25 feet, it's harder to take care of than it would be if you had a lawn, because it's not enough to actually own a mower. So,
what did you get? Scissors?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Huh.
And then we also garden at C Street Community Garden. We have a 10 by 20 foot plot out there.
Oh,
as well.
Oh, and I do. I definitely know about that. I've never done it myself. That's something where you sign up at the city.
Correct.
When do you sign up?
It's soon. I think if you had a plot, you already have signed up. And then the new plot sign up is coming up next week, I think.
Okay.
So for anybody who doesn't want to return, which is usually about a third of the plots turnover every year.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're interested in that, you definitely want to find out and get there early, because they disappear quickly. We don't have enough community garden space in the city.
Do people line up before the city office opens? And
absolutely.
Is it that kind of thing?
It's that kind of thing. It usually sells out in 15 minutes. So.
I feel like I should have thought of this and put it on the website, but I can do it after the fact. It would be at muni.org, and then can you tell me exactly where we should go? Do you know that?
It's the muni.org, and then it's just under community gardens. There's a thing on the side of the website that there's
find.
A panel that says.
So you've done this for how many years?
We started
at the community garden.
At the community garden, we're at 7 years, I think.
You get your same plot back each time?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is really nice, because then we've gotten most of the weeds out of our particular garden, because we take care of it. And
you maybe can enrich
and
amend the soil.
Amend the soil to build it the way we want it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's great. Well, now we need to get to Dennis and hear what your yard looks like, or your garden. Environment.
Our location in South Anchorage has got a milder climate, of course, than up on the hillside or even East Anchorage. East Anchorage gets some pretty harsh, colder weather than what we do, although we do get the strong winds, so it causes us some problems, some little challenges, where to plant things, because we have gale force winds coming through there. So anyway, we have 2 different plots. One across the street from us really doesn't belong to us, but there's a wonderful neighbor, Tom, who has allowed people to use the space for about 20 years. And my wife was one of the original involved in that plot. It's called Mardane's Garden now.
Oh, I read about that, but I didn't know exactly what it was. Okay.
And it's a dedication, the name, to his wife, who passed away, but she was a very avid gardener and really created a wonderful network in our neighborhood of people who just wanted to get together, and they weren't so really driven to high production, but just it was a social thing as much as a gardening thing.
How big is Mardane's lot?
Oh, gosh. I'd say there's probably 30 garden beds, and each one is about 8 feet long and 3 feet wide.
Oh, it's pretty sizable.
It's a good space. It's really. But there are 6 families over there working in there now. And so it's just a really pleasant, interesting place. You know, there's kids that come around, and just nice to see the neighbors that we don't see all winter long come out in the springtime and share that enthusiasm for gardening. So.
And does it get competitive at all?
Well, of course. I mean,
okay. They are humans, but, after all.
Right. everybody gets competitive but me, Kathleen.
Of course, I knew that. I just knew that.
Right.
It's a beautiful private community.
You've seen
garden.
It? Yes. You've seen it done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if people wanted to drive by and see it, is it okay to just throw that out there if you wanted to see Mardane's garden?
Sure, it is. And it's on Pacific View Drive. You just swing down through there. Pacific View Drive is just a short street off of John's. And there are a lot of people in the neighborhood that's included on their route walking. And so, you know, we get to see familiar people all the time.
That sounds pretty sweet.
It is. It is. It really is.
Yeah. Do you have people at the community gardens, Don, that you have been friends with for years? Or does it not really develop the same way there?
A few, but it's not as personal as a neighborhood garden would be, for sure.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we're working on with the community garden. But being organized through the city, there's kind of a barrier because we don't have a way to contact one another unless we literally go up and ask each other for email addresses and stuff.
Organize or gather people particularly.
We can, but it hasn't been available lately. But I think the new people who are running the gardens are going to try and move in more in that direction, which is the way the Juneau Community Gardens are organized.
So do you mean the new administration?
The new administration,
yeah. Okay, so they have a different approach. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But we're not done with your garden.
Well, that would be the Mardane's garden portion of our activities. And then the other portion is on the south side of our house. There's a very steep slope going down to the Coastal Wildlife Refuge. Far too steep to even walk comfortably. It's something almost to do hand over foot, you know, getting up the hill. But being such a south slope, it was just an invitation to build some terraces there. And they turn out to be a really wonderful place, an aesthetic wonder to be out there in the backyard looking over the wildlife refuge and cranes flying around and just spectacular place to grow a garden, although there are challenges. We don't do much back there except for root crops because of the destructive winds that'll come along. So anyway, it's a good, you know, it's a really tremendous fertility in that area. Which we've enjoyed. But the combination of the two is really great for us.
Wow. Well, I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time and let folks know if you've just joined us. Our topic today is how to get gardening, because we're ready. It's time. And about this time every year, we do something about gardening, and I know I'm ready. So if you've got questions we've got Dennis Ronci and Don Wood, two master gardeners who are steeped in survival in the garden and success in the garden too. You can give us a call at 550-8433 or 1-888-353-5752, or we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Go ahead, Dennis. Yes.
Well, you mentioned the Master Gardener Conference coming up that's sold out, but I think it's also worth mentioning. It's a really wonderful organization, and it is open to the public. They have monthly meetings.
Maybe every Monday or every third Monday, something like that.
Yes.
I should put that on our website too. In addition,
it's a really wonderful network of people that enjoy the same enthusiasm. There's a lot of people that are interested in horticultural things. There's a
good
contingent of vegetable gardeners. Yeah, and it's a great place if you just want to get to meet other people in the area.
Yeah.
And the Master Gardener logo or the Master Gardener title is a little misleading because it's just regular gardeners. I mean, it's not like these people
you don't
are
have
on
a PhD
high. We don't have PhDs in gardening.
Gardening, yeah.
It's just regular people who've learned, who are avid gardeners who
Yeah. I think it's an important resource, and it's good to know that you don't have to be an expert to go. You don't have to be a master to go.
Right.
Yeah,
and
you can learn a lot.
Anyone is welcome. It's an open organization to the public. If you want to be a voting member, then you can pay the $20 membership. In order to become a master gardener, officially, you do have to take the course and pass the exam. However, the exam, in a common sense way, is an open book exam because really the information in gardening is constantly changing. There's so much more accurate updates constantly occurring that it makes so much sense that a exam for proficiency is not what gardeners did 20 years ago. But master gardeners are innovative and creative in the way that they respond to different environments, if they're mm-hmm. urban or if they're in mm-hmm. their own backyard.
Or if they're in a cold spot or a windy spot.
Yeah.
We actually have a caller, and I'm going to welcome on Ginger. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate it. And hi to Dennis and Dawn. I know them from the Master Gardeners as well. I wanted to let listeners know that in addition to the Master Gardener program, the Alaska Botanical Garden offers a lot of educational opportunities. We have seed starting workshops, but I wanted to make a point to Dennis's topic earlier, how he learned to garden as a child, that we have junior Master Gardener programs for children in the summer, and invite listeners to go to alaskabg.org on the web and check out our schedule for summer learning opportunities.
I just want to say, Ginger, I did add the Botanical Gardens schedule on our website. And so it's at alaskapublic.org. People can find it, or they can find it at your site. And, you know, we want to be inclusive about the opportunities and resources that there are for gardeners in Anchorage. It's all good. So I'm glad you called.
There are so many. And add on about the new community garden up in Mountain View.
Okay, tell us a little bit about it. I didn't know it was brand new. I thought that it actually had become almost a garden for newcomers to Anchorage.
So there's multiple ones. Are you talking about the Bregaw Gardens?
Mountain View Gardens. They're actually having a fundraiser tonight to help get the gardens established. It is a community garden.
Is it run through the city, or is it run in a different way?
The Mountain View, I apologize. It's a farmer's market.
Ah, right? Yes, the farmer's market.
It's a farmer's market, not a community garden. I am so sorry I misled you on that. But it's the opportunity for the fresh, locally grown produce, which there are many farmer's markets throughout Anchorage.
Yes, yes, it's very good. So, all right, that's great. And so once again, don't forget there's workshops at the Botanical Garden, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Kathleen.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot, Ginger.
Kathleen, to her point, because there's so few community garden spaces and they sell out so quickly, I know that there's a new community garden in the works for Muldoon's new park, and there's a new community garden in the works for Government Hill. So both of those should come online here in the next year or two, and that'll certainly help relieve some of the congestion at the community gardens and let more of the gardeners, more people do it, because there is a big push towards being able to get involved in food again.
Right. Local food is becoming food that you know how old it is and where it came from.
Or that just has flavor.
Right, that too. You guys are experts not just in gardening in general, but you each have some expertise that we're going to tap today, but we can also move on beyond that. But I think dirt is sort of basic, and I believe that we don't have good dirt to start with here in Anchorage. So can you kind of school us up a little bit on if you're going to start a garden, what might you need to do? And I know I'm not giving you a pH or anything like that.
Right. And there are wonderful soil tests that a person can complete on their garden soil to determine what exactly amendments they might need. But I have never done that. It's rather expensive. And I think conceptually a person has to consider soil as a living thing because it is so loaded with microbial life. It needs water, it needs nutrients, and it needs air, just the same as most living things. So keeping your soil healthy is such a basic primary importance that I think a person, it's easily overlooked. It's just because it's not so observable to look at soil and know that it's healthy or not. It's more about how it's responding to what you do, how it absorbs water, how warm is it, how is it shaped, how is it elevated for your garden. Those are all essential observations rather than just plucking a plant down into the soil or putting the seeds into the ground, as the garden packet describes. The soil has to be fertile before anything can happen. And it's, you know, we always want to buy topsoil, get a truckload of topsoil and get that garden going, which is, topsoil is a euphemism for somebody else's junk dirt that was hauled away and placed, I mean, possibly. Possibly there's wonderful topsoil, but I don't want to condemn all topsoil, but I do want to say that it can be misleading to get a truckload of what's been labeled as topsoil. I don't think it's going to have fertility.
It may not be nirvana.
It may not be anything worthwhile. So I think after the arrival of the topsoil, then a person needs to start working with it.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And in order to work with it, that means adding in a lot of nutrients, which don't have to be expensive. They can be things that are purchased. There are some wonderful products available at the garden stores. But there's things all over the neighborhood and at local coffee shops, breweries that are free and actually, I think, contribute to the health of our community when we avoid throwing things into the landfill and recycle them and use them in our gardens. They can produce tremendous fertility. I worked at an office where there were mountains of shredded documents, and they were going into the landfill, of course. And I started investigating a little bit and found that these things can be used in garden beds. And so they were the foundation of several of my garden beds.
So you just take that shredded paper and you just put it right down, and then you add dirt on top of that?
Dirt on top of it, mixed with the shredded documents, mixed with like some coffee grounds from the local coffee roasters, and stir it up, and it starts to heat. It becomes compost.
I'm gonna welcome a guest onto Hometown Alaska, but we're gonna come back because I have I have a compost heap and I want to discuss it further. I'd like to welcome Erica on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Erica.
Hello. Excuse me. Yeah.
Well, welcome. Do you have a question for our master gardeners?
I didn't have a question. I just had something to add about the wonderful gardening. I have a wonderful I used to have a wonderful vegetable garden. But, of course, I have gotten old. And I wished I would have somebody who would make use of it.
Oh, sort of like Mardane's garden, in a way.
Yeah,
Well, that's interesting. So you're sort of saying, gee, I have a place that would be great to garden, but I can't. How do I connect up with people that might?
Well, yeah, and of course I don't, you know, I want somebody who thinks the same way like I do with, you know, using natural stuff and so on. And your elbow grease.
Good old-fashioned elbow grease, yeah.
Pulling weeds, yeah. And I started some strawberries that I got from our previous place where we lived, and they are just wonderful and taken over. But, of course, I have been handicapped for quite a while.
Well, I'm just wondering if you know, imagine this was your issue, where would you go to try to make connections, Dennis or Don?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, there is a organization called Yardicopia that's run through ACATS that might be useful. They specialize basically in finding people with yards and finding gardeners and connecting them, because there are several people with yard space that don't have time or the ability to garden but would like to see a garden. So,
it is still an
active thing. Michelle Wilbur runs that program, and I would highly recommend contacting her. I'm sure we can get that address on the website as well.
We could get that added. Have you heard of Yardutopia, Erica?
No.
Okay, so this is new information for you. Could be really good. Yeah.
So how do you spell it?
It's like Yardutopia.
Oh. Yardutopia.
And it's
Copia. Okay.
And I know I've seen it on the website for the
Alaska Center Alaska
Community
Actions on Toxics.
Alaska Community Actions on Toxics, so ACAT.
ACAT.
They have a website, and it's one of their features on their website. So that would be...
Just Google Yard Yucopia, it'll come
up
as well.
It'll probably pop up. Yeah, just Google Yard.
It's the U part that's the confusing part. You always got to get Yard Yucopia.
Okay, good.
Yes.
That's great. That's great. What part of town are you in?
Midtown, between Dowling and Tudor and Lake Otis and New Seward.
Ah, and have you lived there for a long time?
We moved here in 72 and still in the same house and love it. And a few of our neighbors are here longer than that. It's a wonderful. It used to be only one street. You could only come in with one street, but that has changed.
Yeah. And just for the record, tell your garden, what did you do with it? Was it a vegetable garden? Was it a flower garden?
No, flowers are somewhere. I mean, I have plenty of place for flowers.
Uh-huh.
But the vegetable garden, yeah. And then somebody gave me some, oh gosh, yeah, now I forgot that. It is some wonderful stuff. She said, good, you put it on burnt skin. And oh my gosh, that stuff had taken over. Comfrey.
Yeah.
Oh, comfrey
will definitely take over, yes.
Oh, so now you have a lot of comfrey.
It's really good for your compost bin, though.
Oh, okay. What about seeds? Well, if you put something, won't you have seeds, and then you'll just...
Well, not if you get it harvested harvested before it goes to seed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And just roughly, Erica, the size of your garden, if you were to find a partner, just what size are you talking about?
Oh, gosh. I'm bad at that. I have three beds and then another small one. Okay. I can't tell you.
Okay.
I'm bad in American... 10, 20 feet long.
Sizable? Mm-hmm. Sizable? Okay.
And then, they are big, yeah.
Well, we...
That can be always enlarged.
Right, right. More is possible.
In the beginning, you know, we had neighbor kids who helped us get the sod out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember a company, Broderick, and they brought the first soil.
Topsoil?
Topsoil, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Well, I hope you call Yardicopia, because that sounds like it might be exactly what you're thinking of.
Thank you.
Going to happen this year.
Yeah, call Michelle. She'll be excited.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Erica.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. So, Dennis, back to... I have a compost thing. It's just... A bin,
one of those black bins about 3 feet tall and rectangular.
Well, my husband built it, I can take the front off and I can get in there and start turning it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I got all these twigs in there. I thought twigs would be a great idea. So now when I try to turn it, it's really hard to turn because it all clumps together.
Yeah.
And also, I also read that you should put aeration holes down, and I didn't do that. And mm-hmm. I don't know. When I read about it, it doesn't stick. But I just go for the pile, and eventually I just sort of thought, well, if I leave it there long enough, it's going to do its thing anyway.
Kathleen, I completely agree. If you leave it there long enough, it's going to turn into soil. If you want to really accelerate the process, you could aerate it. You could take really good care of it, turn it often, religiously keep it moist, mm-hmm. and give it sun where it'll stay warm. And it will decompose more quickly. But mm-hmm. my method is a lot like yours, except I have many large compost piles. And so there's always something that's at the bottom of the compost pile that's been decomposed naturally.
So you have, I do have a friend who has three.
Mm-hmm.
And so things get moved forward, I think.
Yes.
Moving sounds like so
know,
much work.
It does
right.
sound like work.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm telling you wrong. Maybe I should just...
That's familiar. We have... old system like that, and now there are three stable, non-moving piles.
Okay. Well, we're going to come back to that after the break. We have just a short break, but I'm not finished talking about dirt because I have dirt anxiety, and I want to get to the root of it. So, all right. Well, this is Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We are talking gardening. We're getting ready. I feel like I already have dirt under my fingernails. I'm ready to go. We have two master gardeners in the studio today, Dennis Ronci and Don Wood. And they are master gardeners here in Anchorage. We've been taking some calls from gardeners, talked about sharing garden. If you have space but you can't garden, that yardicopia, that was really fun to think about. But most recently, we were talking about dirt. And in the break here, we were talking about how fundamental it is to have really good dirt. So it's worth spending a little more time on. I know I did go out to the Midnight Sun Brewery, and they have these big bins in their parking lot that are spent hops, I think
spent
is
yeast,
the right.
Yeah, or spent grains.
And I just like loaded up, and I put that in my compost heap when I was really going strong, and boy, did it heat it up. I mean, mm-hmm. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So I did try coffee grounds. I made friends with my local coffee vendor, and I didn't get the same reaction as I did from mm-hmm. the spent, not grain. Did I say that wrong? Spent?
No, spent grain is what you had.
Okay. So anyway, what can you tell me about that?
Well, one thing I can tell you is that even though it seems like it's really great that you get all that heat out of your compost bin,
that's not a good thing.
It's not necessary. Yeah, I'm actually a believer in a cool compost because I think, first of all, it produces the microbes that we want for our cool climate, but also because I don't want to kill all the light. The original theory there was you got it so hot that it self-sterilized, but we've moved past the sterilized soil thing, and now we're into, growing a garden is about growing your soil, as Dennis said. It's about building life in your soil so that, because what feeds your plants is the life that's in the soil, not the chemistry.
So it's not so important to get your compost heap as so hot.
No. The idea there was it killed weed seeds and it killed pathogens, but if you don't have pathogens, and I'm a believer in mulch, which is also how Dennis grows, so that we don't have very many weeds that germinate because they're underneath a layer of mulch that never sees sunlight.
Okay. Mulch would be grass, mm-hmm. clippings, mm-hmm. leaves.
And we really haven't talked about mulch yet, but that's one of the, in my thinking, one of the important annual aspects of soil building.
Okay.
In the fall in Anchorage, when people are hauling their raked leaves out to the curbside and landscape companies are accumulating them. Yeah.
We don't steal. We ask.
I think there are some laws involved, though, actually, but with curbside products that are set out. I don't know the details of it, but I always like to just inform the neighborhood, inform the property owner that I'm interested in these things if they're organic, you know, if they don't have hazardous materials, broken glass, or pet poop in them. So, and most always, you know, I'll just leave a phone number and a homeowner will call back and say, I'm so glad you're going to take those, really. You know, I'd have to pay a little bit to get them into the landfill. And the same thing with landscape companies. They will drop off truckloads of mm-hmm. bagged leaves, and those are a treasure. And they can go directly on to the garden in the fall if you have in the bags, I think is the easiest way to handle them. Just like pillows of insulation mm-hmm. to keep, not so much to protect from cold, although that's important for some fragile perennials, mm-hmm. But to keep things cold. This winter we've had such a warm, and last winter as well, such warm weather that it's a real challenge to keep those roots inactive and protect them from the freeze-thaw cycles that are so destructive. Mm. So the pillows of leaves on top of the garden are really beneficial in that way. And then in the spring, they're so easy to pull off and clean up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to rake and rake to get your garden beds ready for growth, and then you still have your leaves in the plastic bag, and you just pull them over to the side of the garden, and then after mid-June when things need to be mulched because the weeds are starting to come, then you can empty your bags of leaves right on top of there and save yourself an immense amount of effort in weeding and in hauling products.
Okay. All right. I was thinking about yard services. Lots of people hire people to keep their, you know, they come and they cut. Yeah. But in that case, if you're trying to be a true organic gardener, you do not want anything on those. You would not want any fertilizer on the clippings. Is that right?
That's true, but that's unrealistic. A lot of yards and the fertilizer and the pesticides, they become pretty inert in a few weeks. And so I think it's important to avoid putting fresh grass clippings as a mulch because they can have herbicides which can kill your garden.
But if you set them aside?
But if they go into the compost pile and are allowed to sit, I mean, it's not perfect, but it works.
It works. Okay. Yeah.
But leaves don't have anything on them because...
They come right from the tree.
Right. People don't spray their trees very often. I mean, there are a few trees, but in general, that's not a big issue.
So leaves are gold.
Leaves are gold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to welcome a guest on to Hometown Alaska. Christy, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. Thank you. My comment is for Dawn. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thanks, dear.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Don.
Thank you, dear.
All right. Hi, Dennis. I'll let you get back to work now.
Thanks,
bye.
Christy.
Okay.
Did you know that was going to happen, Don?
I did not know that was going to happen. No.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it is my birthday.
Is someone
going to
pay big for that?
No, she won't. She's a sweet girl.
Okay.
That's why I married her.
Okay.
I had threats from people of similar things they were going to call in for. Kathleen, can we screen the callers from
yes,
here on?
Yes, exactly.
More careful screening. Some truths about your gardening are going to come out here. Okay, so we talked mulch. I'm just going to say I have a backyard with lots of trees, so I have packed dirt. I have a raised bed. I stopped putting any fertilizer on my lawn because I have dogs and I didn't want them to ingest things. And then I also started hearing that it was really better for trees not to do that on your lawn. So anyway, I mean, I don't know what, I have a kind of, it's not small, but it's square and with a garden bed and my compost in the back. But I feel like I should, there's a lot of space there that I should be doing more with. Maybe more raised beds is the answer, you know, not trying to, because I've got tree roots through everything. Mm-hmm. So can you put raised beds on top of tree roots?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm a big advocate of either lasagna style or mulch style gardens where you build right on top of the existing soil. Because most yards are hard packed, hard pan, with very little topsoil, just a little bit to cover the subsoil that was there. And it's really easy to just build up layer after layer. Essentially, you build compost piles in place of assorted organic material. Again, usually mostly stuff that it was going to the waste stream.
I was going to do this, and then I lost heart. I thought, I don't really know what I'm doing. I got my husband to save me all these big moving boxes because I thought, I can just flatten those out. And then I've heard something about lasagna gardening. And so after a week or two, he said, where do you want me to put these boxes? And I said, well, put them back by the compost heap. And then it rained, and then they got, you know. And eventually he said, are you going to do anything with those? And I lost heart. And I said, no, I guess we should just get rid of them.
It's really, really easy. It just takes the ability to just decide to do it. And again, I think Michelle at ACATS is teaching classes in that as well. But there are lots of people and lots of resources around town for people to teach you how to do that. But one of the things that they do is they hold moisture. We built, my son used to go to a small private school, and we built a garden there, again, on top of the lawn on a section of incredible hard pack.
Even with tree roots, it's okay.
Fully with tree roots and everything else. It's actually against a row of trees. And then we built that with just donated materials. A couple of the families had horses, so we had horse manure and straw and old newspapers and leaves and just layer after layer of organic material, watering it in. We built the garden the 2 weeks before school got out. We planted our starts that we'd started in the classroom the last week of school. We watered them the week that we planted them. And then, of course, everybody left for the summer. And we had big plans to organize twice a month. Kids would come to the school. Well, that just didn't happen, of course, in the summer. Mm-hmm. And so we just figured when we get back at the end of this year, the garden would be these withered little plants that had started.
And some weeds, maybe.
And we harvested 480 pounds of food out of this small garden in September for they had a big school party and made all that food into food with the fourth graders. And this was third graders that did this, by the way.
And so if third graders can do it, I should be able to.
Exactly. So it's not hard, and really what it takes is just doing it. I mean, that's we started our gardening 15 years ago. We didn't know anything about it. And we started with a 4x8 plot. Now we've gone up to we're at 700 square feet total, including our deck garden, and we're producing 2,000 pounds of food. And we actually calculated it one year. We did the Alaska Food Challenge one year, and so we kept track of all of our food consumption and tried to eat as much Alaskan food as possible, which was easier for us because we grew so much.
That's all you eat.
That was right. That's mostly what we eat. And we found out we only spend about 7 hours a week total, so it's an hour a day, on average, to grow 2,000 pounds of food. So it's not hard, and it's not super time consuming. We're pretty good at it now, so that we've got experience, but still, it's not that overwhelming as long as you don't start with 700 square feet or Dennis's 2,000 square feet of massive. If you don't start out farming, if you start out gardening, it's really a fun activity, and it's again, once you taste the food, you get hooked.
Yeah. Well, let me throw out our phone numbers again for folks. I want to find out if all winter long or right around February, you have a bedroom that's turned into a grow lab. But let me throw our phone numbers out. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide. Or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I mean, what do you do with your seeds? When does that begin?
For us, we started back in, I think, late January, something like that. And we have a calendar built with about probably 150 things that we'd like to germinate this spring. And the calendar, some things have to be germinated very early, of course. And so then there's others that really would be extremely overdeveloped and gangly and not survive well outdoors if they're started too early.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have a little plan, and we just use fluorescent lights, and it's not an expensive special
setup
at all.
Did you build your own ways of hanging the lights?
We did, yeah.
How about accidental leaks on your floor?
Well, really, we haven't had too much trouble with that. But we, haven't had any permanent stains, but we get spills all the time.
Not a big deal.
But we do. You mentioned a bedroom.
Less spills than you had with your kids.
Yes, and speaking of kids, we are aspiring grandparents. And so our daughter and her husband, wonderful. And we just have her old bedroom we call the germination room.
Oh, that's what happens to bedrooms in Anchorage when the kids leave, becomes the germination room. That's great. So you had 150 things that you were starting, but along a calendar so that they were when they're at the right stage when you can finally put them in the ground.
Right.
So just one bedroom.
No, bedroom and then the crawl space down below, and then every south-facing window in the house. Probably, those little white plastic tables from Costco, they're about 4 feet long and 2 feet wide. We probably have 15 or 20 of those scattered around the house in places where the ceilings can get enough light.
You're scaring me, Dennis.
Well, I'm going to welcome a guest on the show. Hello, Nancy. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hello. I'd like to put a generous layer of horse manure on my garden beds, and I'm willing to rent a pickup and go, but I need some advice on, one, connecting with stables or horse owners, and two, any advice from your guests on the timing, the depth, and anything I can do to suppress weeds. I know my father did this for years, and he has the most luxuriant chickweed in his garden ever. I'd like to avoid that if possible.
Okay. What do you say? Do you guys get manure from any place, or is it a secret that is never shared?
I would say it's an excellent source of nutrients. You wouldn't want it necessarily if you wanted to grow perfectly clean potatoes, because it's got the Staphylococcus bacteria, which is also the one that will affect scab on potatoes. And the pH of horse manure tends to be rather basic, which favors all that bacterial growth. But it's wonderful fertility. You will get tons of chickweed.
So there is no solution to the chickweed.
Mulch.
Mulch.
We did. Okay, mulch.
All right. And then I saw on some Master Gardener website earlier, I think, or maybe it was an email, that there are various stables that sort of welcome people to come with a pickup. But is there any place I should look? I don't know where I found that information.
I would just ask the farmer to make sure that they aren't feeding, well, where they get the hay, because that makes a difference. There is a there's a an amazing new herbicide that they're using in the States, not so much in Washington. Apparently it's illegal in Washington, so if they're getting the hay from Washington or from Alaska, you're okay. But some of the states still are using this herbicide, and it actually persists through the digestive system, even of ruminants. So it's you can make poison compost. But
I did hear about this.
But it's being phased out for the most part, but it is still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure you know where the hay, if the hay came from Washington State or Alaska, it's not a problem. And then also make sure that they don't have any sick horses that they're medicating. And then aside from that, it's really all I would worry about. And just, it's kind of the same philosophy as buying produce. You just want to know your farmer and make sure that you're comfortable with how they're treating their...
Do you know, as Master Gardeners, is there any kind of place where people share this information on the website? Or it's...
I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just word of mouth. I just...
Put a Craigslist.
Yeah,
Craigslist.
Go to Craigslist. There's almost always manure on Craigslist.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah. And
okay.
So you can just ask the farmer that question or the rancher that question when you...
All right. And there's even... Go ahead, Nancy.
No, just thanks for the tips on medication and the hay sources. I wouldn't have thought of those.
Yeah. It did make me think of chicken manure. And lots of people... I think we can have 5 chickens in our backyards here in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. But I have also heard that it's hotter or something like that. Safe to maybe, I don't know what that means. Do you have to cut it with other things?
It means you don't want to plant directly in it, yeah.
Okay.
But it composts very quickly. And so if you have got really active soil, the other thing is a lot of these issues that we talk about of the burning the plants and stuff, I think are a much bigger issue in people that are trying to mix chemical and organic gardening, because every time you put chemicals, you kill all that life that you've tried to build up in an organic system. And so consequently, you can't go back and forth. You either have to be...
Commit
one way or the other.
Okay.
And then, and organic is a lot cheaper and a lot simpler once you get the system established, because it's really just what nature wants to do. It's just, we're just mimicking what's happening in the forest.
All right. I'm going to welcome one more caller. Hi, Denny. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I got a question about... mulch on top of a bulb bed. I planted a small bed with bulbs a couple winters ago, and I guess the freeze thaw seemed to pretty much kill everything off, so I had very poor production the next spring. So this past winter, I piled it up high with probably a foot and a half worth of leaves over the top of it to protect it over the winter, but I don't know when to take it off. It's such a crapshoot.
Well, what do our experts...
Yeah. Denny, I've had similar uncertainty, and so I peeked under my bags of mulch about a week ago. Ones that were close to the house were already sprouting. Soil was entirely thawed. And then yesterday, so I removed those bags of leaves, of course. In the one hand, those bulbs may get damaged from later frost to come, but they're certainly going to be destroyed if I leave the bags of mulch on top of them. So really, there's not much choice there. And then yesterday I looked under some other bags and things that were, these were cold places far away from the house, and things are already starting to sprout there. So I went ahead and pulled all those off. In a few places they were still frozen, but I think it's, you know, once things start to sprout underneath the mulch, the mulch has definitely got to be removed.
So peaking. You recommend peaking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have handy little bags, but I can just take a rake out there and carefully.
Yeah, if it's still frozen to the ground, the leaves, if the base layer is still frozen to the ground, I think you're safe to leave it in place.
Okay, thank you.
Dennis, did you say you actually have your leaves, you lay pillows of leaves?
Right.
So you just lift those bags? Okay.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Right. Yeah.
First time I saw that.
And they're dry, so they're light, right?
Yeah, I love it to be flattered for being smart when I'm just pretty lazy.
Let's see, I'm trying to think. I know when I've had grass in bags, it gets stinky and wet and falls all apart, but that doesn't happen to leaves. They stay nice and dry. Okay.
They do. And in fact, you can, if you want to then accelerate the composting or the You can build little mulch or little compost bags if you open up those bags of leaves in the spring and throw in some coffee grounds or other organic matter that's going to blend in as a compost, and then let them sit. Close up those bags of leaves and a little bit of coffee grounds.
Spray water in there?
Yeah, they need to be damp. Yep. Yeah, to favor the microbial life, it needs to be wet. Mm-hmm. And then just seal up those bags again and open them up, and they will be semi-decomposed in about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow. That's a good tip. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's so easy.
I was thinking about, and it just flew out of my head. I forget what it was going to be. Had to do with composting. I don't know. I'm sorry. I just let's see.
Well,
oh, I know. It was this actually. Sorry, I knew I would remember. When I was on the phone with you, Don, the other day, I said, "Well, it's about good dirt, right?" And you said, "It's about live dirt."
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to have live dirt? Could we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I actually, in my presentation, I do on occasion for different gardening clubs around. I looked up what a healthy soil has in life in it, and in a cup of active topsoil, just in a natural setting, there's billions of organisms that are alive in that soil, and
you need a microscope to see them, right?
Oh yeah, at all different levels. So there's and that is actually what is feeding the plants. The waste products and the stuff that those animals are doing in that soil are what breaks down all that soil and also or breaks down all that organic matter, creates soil and releases the nutrients, right?
Uh-huh.
And so what we're doing with chemical style gardening is trying to simulate that by flushing the soil with those chemicals. But of course, if you can imagine, it would be like if we tried to feed ourselves by composting or what our stomach takes in and just synthesizing that and then pouring it over the top of us, it mm-hmm. wouldn't be particularly healthy for us. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same problem. So it destroys the soil when you use
lots
organic. So going for an organic system, once you've established that microorganisms, which are everywhere, there you don't have to look for them or create them. Yeah, there's you just have to start doing it and take care of them, basically. And
okay.
So I always tell people I'm really a dirt farmer. I work on growing good dirt, and then
the dirt
all the
grows
rest,
your vegetables.
The dirt grows all the vegetables. The bugs in the dirt grow all the vegetables for me.
Yeah.
So that's do the work.
We've talked about how we did the layering lasagna kind of thing. I mean, when you go out, will you be enhancing your dirt, or is it a years long process? So now you've achieved a certain quality and life in your soil that you just keep feeding organic material into it.
Yeah, I think there is something of an annual cycle of care. And this time of year or spring is not the time for me and my way of doing things to be digging into the soil, as I might if I was a farmer or a gardener in some warm part of the lower 48. Turning the soil in the spring here in Alaska, we're going to get down into the cold soil. And I think, it'd be just like if you took almost any form of life and put it into the freezer, put it into a very cold refrigerator, those soil organisms are going to slow down. They're just going to stop functioning. And what we want is to get that soil as warm as possible within reason. Put a little plastic covering on top, some clear plastic.
Not brown, not dark plastic.
Well, black plastic will actually be cooler than the clear plastic because the sun's going to warm up the black plastic at the surface, and the soil itself can remain quite a bit cooler underneath.
Oh, I didn't.
So clear plastic works much better, and it's easier to see what's going on under there. If you're germinating things, you can increase the soil temperature pretty quickly. But I think that's just one of the basic things about soil is to get it warm. Just having a flat garden, like you mentioned, you have a space in your backyard, it's not only a ton of work to dig it up, your garden will function so much better if it's elevated. If you build your compost pile on top of that soil, and then you have the soil warmer because it's being drained better, it's getting a little more exposure from the sun because it's got a little slope to it. And I was out on Sunday, planted a bunch of onions in our garden. And these are big mounds. It's not a conventional flat-looking garden. It's big, more like little hills, and so on the tops of the hills, the soil is already thawed down probably 6 inches. Mm-hmm. But on the low side of the hills, the soil is frozen right at ground level. So just as a real dramatic indication of how that's important.
Mm-hmm. Just the elevation. So, yeah. So you have like little mounds.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to get a picture of how what your backyard looks like. Like, you know, it's not, but it has texture, yeah. I guess you would say. It's not flat.
Right. It's not cosmetically wonderful. It's kind of unique.
Yeah.
It's actually a lot like the terraces in South America that you see at the Mayan gardens. That's actually what it reminded me of, only mm-hmm. then with active mounds and of
yeah.
rows, but
yeah.
but it's terraced down this hillside and
yeah.
quite.
Yeah.
I think it's quite spectacular, Dennis. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we did want to talk a little bit about yield because we were saying Don, you are going to be teaching about container gardening, but you really, basically, you're a dirt farmer. You want the richest dirt you can get, and then the yield is good. So what can you give us on that?
Well, the main things that I do differently than your average gardener to increase my yield is that we extend our season. I mean, we've our south-facing deck garden, we have stuff outside already because there's enough light starting the 21st of March. We're the same as everywhere, right? So, and this was what I read about originally from a gardener called Elliot Coleman, who is in Maine and has a market garden. In other words, he's a farmer's market gardener or farmer who for years only sold vegetables from October through May in Maine.
Only.
He was closed during the summer just to show that you could do it. So he grows all his. Now, granted, it's warmer in Maine than it is here overall.
Shorter winter generally.
But and they don't get as much dark is really the big difference here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have plenty of light starting in March. So if you've got the right plants in the right conditions, I mean, like Dennis said, the garden beds are still frozen. But my deck garden, the soil in the pots that have been sitting on the deck all winter have been thawed for a month.
Right. And you don't change that dirt out because you're enhancing that dirt all the time. So what do you do when
that's not true because
okay.
unfortunately with the small pots, it's hard to keep an active ecosystem. So what happens is I take those pots, I empty them out into a bed with fresh compost in it so that I can regenerate that soil and bring it back to life, and then I bring up good soil or new soil.
Oh, so you do transition your soil.
So in my container
Containers,
gardens, yes,
yeah.
I do transition the soil. Although not in all of them. The strawberry pots obviously stayed planted until the strawberry plant gives up the ghost.
Right. I'm going to make you laugh because I thought each year what I had to do is I would go get a rototiller and I would rototill my and that's a terrible thing to do, right? Because I mean, I thought I was getting rid of the slug eggs, but mm-hmm. what I was really doing was breaking down the soil, I think.
You're destroying all the structure in the soil that's created.
So I don't do that
life.
Anymore.
Yeah,
so but
good.
I thought that was
well,
a good
we all did. I mean, that's what they told us to do. If you read the books on chemical garden, that's what they tell you to do. They tell you to break up the soil into little chunks, and
mm-hmm.
And I think the fall is a good time to do that sort of stuff.
You could do it in the fall.
I do a lot of digging in the fall to stir in massive amounts of leaves from the neighborhood and coffee grounds and build the beds at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you guys have been awesome, and there's so much more we could talk about.
I can't believe the time's up
already.
I know.
Well, it is, and we have to say thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your expertise with us. It's Dennis Ronci and Don Wood, master gardeners and local gardeners. We'd like to thank our callers and listeners. Next week, I'll be back as your host with historian Katie Ringsmuth to talk Alaska baseball. Our show is timed with an upcoming Ken Burns documentary on Jackie Robinson. Pat Yak is vice president of public media. Eric Bork is our web editor and audio engineer. Dave Waldron worked in the studio today. Thanks for joining us on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.